Good morning, everyone. I hope you all had a good night last night in Philadelphia, and those of you who attended the dinner that ISI kindly sponsored to accompany our conference had an opportunity to enjoy Robert Spencer's very provocative and stimulating book discussion on his new book, Did Muhammad Exist? You had a good breakfast as well. So welcome to our concluding panel of our 48th Philadelphia Society annual meeting devoted to America and her detractors in the modern world. Before I get to the task of introducing the panel, I'd like to do a couple of important, Bill calls them quaintly, housekeeping themes, items. First, I'd like to remind you of our upcoming Philadelphia Society meetings. We have a great schedule of meetings, very exciting for the next 2 years, and I hope that you will see me at all of them. I hope to see all of you and more members of the Society at all of them. Not just more current members, but more members at all of them. Our 2012 regional meeting will be held on October 12th and 13th in Memphis, Tennessee. The headquarters hotel is the historic Peabody Hotel there, and our theme will be federalism. It's advantages and problems looking ahead. Our 2013 national meeting will be held in Indianapolis, Indiana, April 5th through 7th, at the Westin Indianapolis Hotel. There are, by the way, good room rates for these, $149 per night at the Peabody in Memphis, $119 at the Westin Indianapolis. And the theme of our Indianapolis conference will be, as I think was previously mentioned, social justice, the concept of social justice, examining that. Our 2013 regional meeting has been strongly recommended to happen at Grand Rapids, Michigan. I don't have the date for that noted here, but Grand Rapids looks to be our most likely destination near to the Russell Kirk Center. And our 2014 national meeting, which will be our 50th anniversary meeting, will be in Chicago, as you've heard. The topic is yet to be announced, but it will be April 4th through 6th of 2014 at the Renaissance Chicago, where we've held many meetings in the past. The second important housekeeping matter that I wanted to accomplish is to thank Julie and Bill Campbell profusely for the hard work that has gone into putting this conference together. Bill, conceptually and intellectually, Julie, logistically, and with all of the arrangements that have made our meeting so smooth, especially facing the challenges of dealing with some new meeting formats, which have required room teardown and setup and things like that that are unconventional. I think they both deserve a big round of applause. When I briefed the concept of this conference to the Board of Trustees in Dallas last year, minutes after they blundered into electing me president for this year, I told them what we haven't yet decoded for you. And that is that I had several heuristic objectives in mind behind this proposal. One was to suggest something that has been already driven home by a number of ideas advanced in our first panel devoted to Paul Hollander's contribution to the study of our topic, but also that had been mentioned in Jim Otteson's luncheon remarks, and in our afternoon panel yesterday before the breakout sessions. And that is that most anti-Americanism has much more to do with who we are as a nation and what we represent to today's and tomorrow's would-be dictators, specifically to their ambitions and agendas, and also what we represent to the domestic left, than it has to do with anything that we actually do or don't do in the wider world. It's not to say that the latter have nothing to do with it, but there's a much more determinative factor that's, I think we want it to be quite beyond our control, who we are. A second objective was to suggest that, consequently, we as conservatives need to think through and formulate our own response to this anti-American phenomena, distinct from the left-wing's approach that we see operationalized in the Obama administration's foreign policy. Since we will, or should, want to effectively defend American interests abroad without denying or betraying that appreciation of our own exceptionalism of which we are convinced. A third heuristic goal for this exercise has been to explore and wring out a quite controversial and edgy idea. This was, in effect, the idea behind yesterday's breakout sessions devoted to the left's discomfort with capitalism and the left's discomfort with the other traditional cultural aspects of American free society. That idea was actually born of an observation of one of my office mates, the White House Writers Group, around the time of the 2000 and 2004 presidential campaigns. Speaking then of the candidate of party brand X over there, my colleague observed, "When are they going to learn that the American people simply will not elect a candidate who fundamentally hates America?" Well, okay, that was then. I mean, how could my colleague really have appreciated, how could he possibly even have anticipated the combination of circumstances, the record that the George W. Bush administration would rack up, and the arrival of a candidate like President Obama that would actually falsify this proposition as quickly as 2008? But back to our story. Ultimately, I suggested that we could use this conference's discussion of the latent anti-Americanism of the left to market test a new slogan, one that just might hit too close to home for comfort, to begin talking ritually and routinely about the anti-American left. Belling the cat this way would obviously cause our ideological adversaries to howl and to kick and scratch and hit back, though it's hard to think of what they could say about us in retaliation that's more vulgar and offensive than what they already say. On closer examination, it might prove too dangerously counterproductive. But if on mature reflection it proved a gambit worth the risk, it just might force them gradually to take some baby steps toward rejoining the American mainstream. You'll remember that Ronald Reagan once archly said, you know, they're so far left, they've left America. If only to avoid hopelessly disadvantageous political positioning. John O'Sullivan and I, I'm not sure if he's still with us this morning, had a little conversation about this with respect to the Tory party's positioning problems lately and the curious positions it's forced them to take, very un-Tory positions, you'd think. Overall, the effort here has been to utilize a meeting of the Philadelphia Society to address, via an elevated and philosophical discussion, I think you'd agree, a practical problem and imperative that confronts us. How to more effectively respond to our anti-American antagonists abroad and exploit the vulnerability that the largely unnoticed and unremarked anti-Americanism of our domestic leftist adversaries represent. And rather obviously, our breakout sessions yesterday were intended to give us some practice also at renewing the conversation by having more of a discussion about ideas among professional peers rather than a Q&A session in response to a series of expert presentations. Judging from the lively parallel discussions yesterday afternoon on the American left's critiques of capitalism and of the traditional little platoons institutions that enrich our lives as free Americans, our experiment with a new format for that part of our meeting, that effort to renew the conversation, seems to me to have been a splendid success. Am I right about that?
Yes.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm reliably told that Mark Henry of ISI, in a display of remarkable but characteristic diplomatic sensitivity, opened his yesterday's little platoons roundtable by warning, "Now we are going to do something new." In that same spirit, we've now come to the part of our conference program where we aim to sum up and where we are going to do something else new. We're going to discuss, in the words of that guiding light of conservatives everywhere, V.I. Lenin, what is to be done. We'll try to distill some conclusions or candidate conclusions for conservatives on dealing more effectively with the phenomena of anti-Americanism. And we'll do this under two rubrics: coping with and countering your anti-Americanism abroad, and dealing with and exploiting the American left's anti-Americanism at home. To do this, we have a panel of five presenters this morning, two of whom will address the international dimensions of the challenge, three will address the domestic ones. I will introduce them all and then turn to them serially. John Lenchowski is an old and dear friend and colleague. He is also arguably the bravest nonprofit entrepreneur on the planet. John and I had the privilege of serving together in the Reagan White House when he was director for Soviet affairs under Professor Richard Pipes, who addressed us yesterday.
I succeeded.
I'm sorry, that's right. You succeeded Richard Pipes. My apologies. Served in that capacity from 1983 to 1987. He was previously special advisor to the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs in 1981 to 1983, a congressional staff member from 1979 to 81, and immediately after the White House, as I recall, went to CSIS, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, for a time, didn't you, John?
It was the Council for Inter-American Security.
I apologize, the Council for Inter-American Security Studies. He has a BA from the University of California, Berkeley, an MA from Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and a PhD from Johns Hopkins taken in 1980, the great rival to my own school, the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. He's the bravest nonprofit entrepreneur that I know because John and I ran into each other on a train when we were both on our way to New York in about 1993 or 94, when I was fairly newly back from overseas, and I asked John what he was up to, and he said he was founding a new professional school of international affairs in Washington, one that would teach rightly a new generation of scholars and diplomats. I thought that was incredibly brave, and it's been an incredible success. He's the president of the Institute of World Politics and one of the proudest, I think, additions to the constellation of conservative institutions, especially on the national security side, that we enjoy. Mike Maybach, our other presenter on foreign affairs, is the president of the European American Business Council. He previously was Intel's chief representative. He was their vice president for government affairs and the founder of Intel's Washington office, and was previously with Caterpillar's Washington office, and had an early career with Caterpillar, actually, I think, beginning on the shop floor, and during which he earned his degrees that led him further on in his professional life. He also has a private foundation and is very generous philanthropically to conservative and other causes to which he's committed. Al Regnery, one of the three panelists who will address the domestic challenge, has just stepped down as the publisher of the American Spectator. He has been the president and publisher of Regnery Publishing, the mark that we all know in the conservative movement for bringing out those wonderful conservative books for decades, and during his time there produced 22 New York Times bestsellers. He served in the Justice Department during the Reagan administration, worked on the U.S. Senate staff, and has been in private law practice. He serves currently on corporate and nonprofit boards and is the chairman of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, the kind sponsors of last night's dinner. Dan Flynn is the author of Blue Collar Intellectuals, When the Enlightened and Every Man Elevated America, one of ISI's books, of course. He appears on this panel by dint of his, I think, self-explanatory contribution to the literature, Why the Left Hates America, which was published in 2002 by Prima Forum. He is a blogger and writer and someone who thinks deeply and writes often about the issues we'll have under discussion. And our last panelist needs no introduction because he's practically legendary. Grover Norquist is the president of Americans for Tax Reform, arguably perhaps the most conservative, influential conservative institution in Washington, certainly when it comes to terrorizing members of Congress about raising your taxes. With that, I will turn the panel over to my colleagues and look forward to their remarks.